Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, the 21st of April, and nobody filed their taxes. Yeah. And I seem to be a photograph now on a YouTube video.
Twitter. We're doing Twitter stream first.
We may try
to do something afterwards.
Periscope. What Scott Adams does.
Yeah, it works pretty well. I mean, we have a pretty good feed going on. I got some nice, but you'll see. After you'll see the replay of this, it's a nice background setup. It's got the studio going, so if everybody can handle seeing my ugly mug throughout a video. Then there you go. But I thought it'd be fun. Especially because people are sitting home and trying to absorb as much entertainment as they can right now. I thought that we would try to do our best, even though it may be painful for me to try to control all this at the same time.
Well, you, yes, okay.
Well, let me give you a quick rundown of what's going on here. We saw oil, which was the big story, again this week, plunging. The May contract was $11.50. On Monday morning, the June contract was at $22 on Monday morning, but that's not the whole story. We're going to get to that. There was a treatment and potential vaccines news was ruling the markets. Last week, we saw a lot of really good and exciting things from companies like Gilead that came out with a study, which was debunked a little bit later. But nonetheless, it was at least a positive in all this incredible amount of just mess and problems. Economic reports are rolling in, pretty ugly. Earnings reports are coming in. Banks got slammed. We have additional stimulus now on the table, just waiting for the Senate to finish up and move it over to the House. Once the House gets it, then President Trump will sign another, I don't know, $400 billion. And the White House has a plan for opening up the economy. Did you see all that? The three phases?
Yeah, I saw some of it. Well, I saw as much of it as I needed to see.
Yeah, I mean, and now already we're finding that some of the governors are just doing what they want anyway.
Which is what the governors are supposed to do. They're the ones running the states.
Right. But there's a plan that everybody was supposed to, I guess it was hinted at that they were supposed to adopt or at least play by those rules.
Well, they could adopt. They could have adopted. But, you know, these are Democrat governors that would like to see the economy collapse so they can make it harder for Trump to get reelected. So they're not going to really cooperate that much. Not that I'm cynical about this.
No, not at all. Not at all. We have a bunch of limericks that we're going to get to as well. Some stock picks. We have a close to the pin winner. So there you go. So going over some of the things that happened with oil, we had a 10 million barrel per day cut that was said to be coming up in May. OPEC agreed. Problem was that we knew that there was still an excess of 10 million barrels per day on top of that. This demand destruction that we're having because nobody's driving and planes aren't flying and boats aren't cruising. So this is massive contango, which means that the forward month's contracts, the May to the June to the July, each successive month was a lot higher than the last. And that's caused a problem because when you have to roll, let's say, and you're invested in oil at $15 a barrel, that's what the futures are, and the next month comes up and you got to get out of that and you got to roll into the $20 barrel or $25 a barrel, it gets kind of expensive. You're losing money as you go. So it's pretty incredible that, one, we're seeing that there's a demand increase that's being priced in, which makes sense, right? I mean, eventually things are going to open up. I don't see any reason why they're not, do you?
Well, they should probably open up now. The Swedish experiment seems to be working, which has got everybody up. They don't want to talk about it. The mainstream media definitely doesn't want to talk about it. But they should be reopening. Even though I was watching KQED, the PBS news hour, and they had some guy on. He says, we can't reopen because then we're going to shoot right back to the 2 million dead.
Right.
There's no evidence of this.
Yeah. Well, there's no evidence of any of this. The original plan they had was and speculation and curve and, you know, hypothetical people that would get sick and then people would get, none of that seems to be working out. Maybe to our benefit. That's a good thing, right? I mean, we're not seeing too many.
Well, it's a good thing except for the fact that we've destroyed the economy.
Yes. Well, I guess then you get back to the question of, you know, how much is a life worth?
Well, you can always say that about everything.
Right. Well, of course. Well,
then why don't we just then, if that's true, then because we have 30 to 60,000 deaths from the regular seasonal flu every year, why don't we shut down the country every year? Because it'll save lives.
Or it will. Or better yet, nobody's allowed to drive anymore.
That'll save 30,000 a year.
Right. So there you go. But I agree that there needs to, I think from what, come on, we can't say that wasn't a good idea to at least try to stop the spread of this thing, right? I mean.
I'm going to reserve my judgment until hindsight analysis is done.
All right. Okay. Well, with all of this that's happened, we saw 2 weeks of upward action because people felt that, you know what? Stocks are a decent price right now. We're going to see that there's an opportunity to buy in. And we saw this really nice rally on the edge of a previous rally. So that was pretty good. And again, a lot of this was predicated on the idea that there was some kind of treatment, even though the study got debunked. Two of them, Stanford study, totally debunked. Gilead, it was only 125 people. Two people died in the study. That's still the same about mortality level, about 1.5%.
Exactly the same.
So
I think that what we're really witnessing is that little curve that you show with that chart that you sent out a couple shows ago.
Yep.
Market goes up, comes back down, comes back up, looking pretty good. Okay, all you suckers, you know, so what are you going to do? And we're at that point.
I think so also. I mean, as we're seeing that the economics aren't getting better, we're seeing that the earnings are questionable, that every company out there is basically pulling their earnings. And the only thing that is hopeful that some of the stimulus is going to help. And that's reasonable. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't bake in the idea that the stimulus out there that's going to be pouring in and pumping up the economy. But the question is, what happens even if? This is the big question, right? What happens even if we say, okay, open right up? And are people going to go back to doing things as normally as they did before?
Nobody thinks they are, except the optimists. I mean, there's optimists out there that think that, wow, the NBA can finish its season. They'll pack them in.
Right. Something's
there are actually people that believe. I mean, I think it's the theaters in Atlanta or somebody decide they're going to reopen the movie theaters. Nobody's going to go to a movie theater.
No.
It's not going to happen. Nope. You can reopen the movie theaters tomorrow in the whole country. You're not going to get any customers.
I saw somebody post somewhere that, hey, we got to bring back the drive-in movies. That would really do a lot. That would really help, right?
I think there are about 3 drive-in theaters left in the country. I think there's one in LA. That's probably the last. Yeah, those would work, but no one's going to be building drive-in theaters.
No. The amount of land that you have to utilize for that and the waste of space during the day. The only thing you could do is put a flea market on it like a lot of people do.
Well, they have Oakland used to have a drive-in theater with 3 screens. And it's a giant flea market. The 3 screens are still there. One of them has been painted green screen so they can shoot. They'll shoot movies there in the green screen and something. So it looks like you're doing something.
Right.
But that one actually could be reopened using the new technologies that the last drive-in theaters used, which was there's none of these speakers that you had to grab and put on your window. It's all done wirelessly and it goes through your radio at some channel.
Right. Exactly. Total change of the old days. The old days you had it stuck in the window. You had to roll it up and get it stuck in there. And then you found out.
And it was a crappy, and then you found out it didn't work.
And then it didn't work anyway half the time and you had to move your car.
But now, it's all wireless. So it works.
Yep.
But nobody's doing that. It's not going to happen.
Nope. Well, let's see here. What else do we got on here? So, okay. And the last thing on this list is that the Fed slowed down their injections of, I don't know, they were at $60 billion, $60 billion a day. Then they went to $30 billion, and now they're at $15 billion. So better. The good news is there. It's good and bad. The bad news is the markets love the excess liquidity. The good news is that the Fed is seeing that, hey, maybe there isn't that much need and the credit markets are healing and things are getting better. So therefore, they don't have to do it anymore. That's good.
Is it?
Well, I think that it's about time that we allow the markets to do what they do on their own rather than having the constant support of the Federal Reserve. It just seems ridiculous to me.
I'm not disagreeing with what you just said, but do you really want to see what the market's going to do on its own?
No, not really. Not
no, of course you don't. Nobody does.
Right. So let's talk about oil. You've been following this whole oil thing. I texted
you. You know, I can't follow it anymore. It's gone to the point of being ridiculous.
Ridiculous. So let's just go through this for our listeners and talk about what happened. So on Monday, I saw that, what day is it? Tuesday. So I saw the oil contract for the May expiration, the futures contract. I saw it hit 1 cent and I was like, oh my. Wow.
I was looking for a barrel I could fill up.
Right. So now the CME comes out with an announcement kind of, I don't know, it was late morning or early afternoon that they say it's possible that through the CME, their May WTI contract could actually trade negative. Now, remember we had this discussion a few weeks ago, a listener wrote in and asked that. I think it was here.
Yes, that asked about a negative oil. So you actually go, they pay you to take oil.
They pay you to take it. They pay you to take it.
I got some oil. You take it, we'll pay you.
Right. So no one wanted to take delivery because there's no room. There's no space left. There's no tankers. There's no barrels. There's no holes.
There's no room. It's full.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, I think the one good piece of good news is that we're in the process of restocking our emergency supply of the nation's oil. We have I forget what it's called, but we have an emergency stockpile of oil.
Right.
That we use.
We have that.
Yeah, and we filled it up. It's the stockpile, which was
everything's filled
getting
up.
Low.
We have to empty out swimming pools at this point, lakes. Or better yet, just not pump it. That would probably be the best idea. God forbid we do that, right? God forbid Saudi Arabia, Russia, they stop pumping. So no one wanted to take delivery because they couldn't take delivery. And all of a sudden, prices start going down even more. And I'm looking at this, and I actually wrote some people that I know in the business, said, is it even possible to have the quotes in my chart show a negative number? I mean, what's going to happen? You know, I was thinking like Y2K. Is it actually programmed to do this, right? So what happened? It started going negative. Did you see that?
I witnessed it for just a few minutes, and I thought it was just an error.
Yeah.
I thought the machines had screwed up.
Right, right. Well, it wasn't an error.
A lot of people say, hey, you said it wouldn't go below 20. You said it wouldn't go below 20.
Right.
Well, to me, it's what am I supposed to say? This is when you have a real crash like this. This is a genuine crash.
Yes, it was. Take a look at this chart here, and you can find this on the show notes for episode number 502. This is what happened to crude. It was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It was trading at about zero, and then it started going down. And when it started going into the negative territory, that was it. Everybody freaked out.
I wonder why.
Went down to negative $40 per barrel. Negative $40 a barrel, meaning one contract. If I was to buy one contract, someone would pay me $40,000.
What's the catch?
The catch is it can go to negative 50, negative 60. And if you held the contract and couldn't get out of it for the next day, you'd have to take delivery. That was the problem. This was rolling today. So you'd have to take delivery on this contract.
Delivery is the problem.
It's a big problem. Big problem. So you have this situation where, you get into this. It's leverage, but this whole thing. But it started to go down. It didn't halt. I was like, isn't somebody going to stop this? It just kept going. I mean, the bar went from in a 10-minute time frame from negative $10 to negative $40, popped back, closed at $37.59. Negative $37.59.
Yeah, negative.
So then this is expiring. They're rolling it over to the next day. And then what happened then? The June contract, the next month, that everybody either rolled into or something, it started going down again. It plunged to $6 a barrel today, the June contract. Now, it did finish up higher towards $14. But, and The May contract, I think, is currently, it's done, but I think it closed today at like $6 on the plus side. You would have made that money, the $46,000 on one contract.
Yeah, it's called a gamble.
Yeah. So, yeah, we did see the June. Somebody's mentioned it didn't go below 20. Yeah, the June contract went to $6 today. So, pretty bad. Pretty bad situation. I'm talking about WTI crude. So, the other thing I want to talk about is the Fed's balance sheet. There's another chart that I put up here. Check this out. I just want to keep a running total and a discussion going about how much stimulus is actually being put into the economy, where there is the desire last year to bring down.
So, you know, you're doing this video thing. You could show this.
I have to set that up.
Are you doing that?
No,
you're showing them?
I could try to set it up. You want me to try to set it up?
No, not now.
I could try to set it up here. Let's see. Let's see if I click this, what happens. Ready?
Uh-oh.
There it goes. It's up. We got it. Should be coming across right now. So there's the Fed Reserve's balance sheet.
Yeah. And I like the way it was steady for so long.
Steady Eddie forever from 2015 up to 2018. And then it just slowed down a little bit. They took it out. And then from $4.2 trillion up to $6.2 trillion in the last month. And you wonder,
when they started doing the easing that made the drop in that chart, which is what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As it started to slide down to, you know, balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to that little point, and then it got the heebie-jeebies, and then it got to that spot where it took off like a rocket. I wonder what would have happened if they had not done that, that slowing down part.
If
it could have stuck.
So that's a tightening mechanism. It actually constrains liquidity in the system. And what happens that when you look at the potential for, well, we had to go and start to increase because we were doing all this other borrowing. So that had to be bonds issued on the other side in order to fund the $2.2 trillion worth of stimulus. This is kind of a direct reflection of that.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. This is the great craziest thing that we're going to ever witness.
Unbelievable. So anyway, get back to this. So I have that. I could put that on the screen. That's good. That worked. Okay. What else do we got here? Let's see. Okay, a PPP program update. All right. Well, we have many small business owners didn't get any money.
Yeah, I think that word should be most.
Most. Most small businesses didn't get any money in the first round, and the money ran out. $350 billion, gone.
Poof.
Yep. Some of the money went to the big businesses and publicly traded companies. We saw one company trying to be gracious and give back the money. Shake Shack gave back $10 million.
Ooh, big spenders.
And Kevin O'Leary, you know this guy, right? The Canadian investor guy?
Oh, yeah.
He's like, it was a fiduciary duty of Shake Shack to take the money. And
oh, that's right. Leary would, yeah, he's a
they shouldn't have given it back.
Yeah, he could. I think the argument is solid.
It's solid, but they got it. They have 7,600 employees. It was meant to be for 500 employees or less. Something's not right with that.
Oh, well, then again, they could make the argument that look, what we did is probably going to get us busted.
Right. It's a loophole.
But yeah, because they use the loophole, they can get you get in trouble. And so Larry's wrong.
Ruth's Chris got tons of money. A lot of restaurants. And Ruth's Chris has tons of employees. There's some discussion
they're all over the country.
FedEx getting FedEx getting money because each of their individual stores are corporately owned in a different corporation or something like, you know, FedEx number one, FedEx Kinko's number two.
Well, that's interesting. Well, you know, the real reason these companies like Ruth's Chris and FedEx got money, the real reason?
Yeah.
Is because they could have a dedicated number of employees working on getting the money.
Well,
a little dry cleaner down the street from me, they don't have anybody they can spend all day and all night trying to get this money. They don't know how to work with the government forms.
Right.
You know that's why they got the money.
But you know what also happened here? It was really interesting. I saw a really good analysis of this. And basically what it was that the companies that had debt that was outstanding at the banks, right? If you had debt outstanding, the banks pushed you to the front of the line. Why? Well, they figured they might as well get money in for you to back up the debt that they have on record so that if you have any problems, that they can fund it. You follow what I'm saying?
So yeah, no, they want the money. The banks are, yes, exactly what that's the smartest thing they could do.
Yeah, it was really smart, but
so the lousy, poorly, not necessarily poorly run, but the shakier companies, the big ones, the shakier big companies, not a little one. Little ones, nobody cares about them.
Right.
The shakier big companies, it's like too big to fail. Almost exactly the same kind of thinking.
Right. But again, it was, and I'll say this, we needed this. It was really important to have. However, the fact still remains that with a hastily crafted program, there's going to be loopholes. There's going to be things that people find and enable them to get money that maybe they weren't supposed to have. But we didn't have any time to put this together, so you can't really blame anybody for that. I don't think.
I agree.
Yeah.
You got to do it.
So the White House and Congress are now negotiating, and they're done negotiating, and it went through unanimous approval by the Senate. It has to go through the House now. And once it goes through the House, it's going to be signed by the president. $310 billion, I think, is earmarked for the PPP program, another $60 billion for the EIDL program. And there's some other programs out there that are, I think, something for hospitals and local states. But more on this, Wells Fargo and Bank of America, JP Morgan, and U.S. Bank Corp was sued by small businesses that accused the lenders of prioritizing large loan distributions as part of the virus rescue package and shutting out the smallest firms that sought money. So I don't know what's going to happen with this next round. Are there going to be some stipulations? And if there are stipulations—
You have a cap on your size.
There is a cap. There's a 500-person cap, a 500-employee cap now.
They got to drop that down.
They should drop that down. But is it fair if now they drop it to 200, let's say, or 100, that somebody that didn't get it because it ran out and now they have 200 employees doesn't get any money? You follow what I'm saying? How is it fair now that they got the money, but other people aren't going to get the money? It just doesn't work. You have to have the same rules. And then if it runs out again, you have to fund it again. Otherwise, people are going to get away with, having too much money.
Who don't deserve it or need it.
Right. Yep. Yep.
FedEx, by the way, should be exempt. They're still in business. They're doing fine.
They're doing fine. Doing great.
So why are they getting money?
Here's a couple of things. The four banks process the applications for the largest loan amounts because they generate the highest fees rather than processing them on a first-come, first-served basis, as the government promised, according to the lawsuit. Banks earned origination fees. Listen to this. Banks earn origination fees of up to 5% on loans up to $350,000, 3% on loans between $350 and $2 million, and 1% on loans between $2 million and $10 million. So that means that they earn $17,500 for processing a $350,000 loan compared to $100,000 for a $10 million loan. So obviously, if the loans are larger, they get a lot more money. So there's a lot of fees in this, and they don't have to do crap. All they have to do is organize the paperwork, push it into the SBA. SBA guarantees the deal. They get the money. They send it out to the account. That's it. The SBA is guaranteeing the whole deal.
Yeah, it sounds more like a bank bailout.
Total bank bailout. Lots of money in it for them. All right, so let's skip over to the current market narrative, the bull case of the market narrative right now. And what we're looking at is that everybody's talking about, hey, you got to just look through earnings this quarter. Just forget about it. Everybody's going to be bad.
Yeah, let's just ignore
We know
reality.
It's going to be bad, so therefore, why bother getting mired in what's going on, right? And anyway, whatever comes out is usually going to be partially during the lockdown, shutdown.
And it's like the bad weather report after the first quarter every year.
Right, exactly. It's the bad weather report extended that, it's the weather. It's going to rain. So you know what? Let's not pay attention to this, what's happening. So that's the first thing. There's a new thing we're looking for is what companies are going to survive? What companies are going to be really good in the new normal? What companies are going to be losers, like the airlines, like cruise lines? And who are going to be the winners, like certain technology companies? Or maybe some restaurants like Chipotle came out with the earnings. They had an 81% surge, obviously, in online ordering and pickups, because that's all there is. So we got their earnings tonight. Stock was up a little bit after hours. Netflix put on 15 million new subscribers in the last quarter. 15 million. They only expected to have like 7 or 8 million. So a lot of people are staying at home. They're probably going into a new regime of how they absorb the content. And maybe it's going to take a lot of people and switch them over to...
I think it's definitely the case. I'll tell you a couple of viewing habits that we've noticed here. Watch a lot more YouTube on your big TV.
Yep.
And you can get hooked on if the algos catch you just right, they start nailing you with little documentaries and pretty good shows. Some of the documentaries I've seen shot at a bookstore with somebody talking about their book are superior to the network presentations where you have these stars in their houses on a lousy microphone somewhere in a bucket. And the place it's blurry and Skype doesn't work right. They got low bandwidth. The whole thing is unwatchable, unwatchable network television. And then meanwhile, you have old TV, a lot of these TVs, or if you have an over-the-air antenna, you get to see all these old, because they just run old reruns from the 50s and 60s. Yeah. And some of this stuff is superior to today's presentations.
Yep, I agree.
By the way, the winner in all this, not for the parks, but Disney Plus really had great timing, because that channel is watched a lot and it's extremely high quality.
Right. But they lost on their streaming sports and their parks.
ESPN is getting killed. Yeah. If you want to see lousy TV, watch ESPN Sports.
I watched last weekend the 1992 hot dog eating competition.
Yeah. This is what they're showing.
Right, that's all it's on. It was interesting to see all those people that you see every year come through this, you know, Joey Chestnut and whatever their names are, but how young they were back then. But anyway, so now we are seeing some changes. I mean, there's going to be changes. I just wrote a piece for my newsletter for the quarter. I talked about how, you know, things are just not going to be the same. They may eventually go back to normal, but there's going to be a lot of changes on consumption of media, how we do things now that we're getting a taste of working at home and how that can really be easily done for a lot of companies. Commercial open offices, a thing of the past. So there's some really interesting things that are going to be coming of this, and it's kind of like almost like a death and a rebirth. You know what I'm saying? It's like a reincarnation into a different way of doing things.
Well, there are a lot of new things that are going to happen.
Yep. But let me just continue with this for a second, this bull case. So we're going to see tech, healthcare, staples, winners. Consumer-facing retail and leisure are going to be losers for the most part if they can't conform to this new world that we're going to enter into.
Well, they're going to have to... up the ante with their online businesses.
Yeah.
I mean, it took Walmart forever to catch up. I don't even think they caught up. But it took Walmart forever to kind of catch up with Amazon.
Yeah.
But Amazon's got all kinds of issues that Walmart doesn't have. For example, I still have a sale that I bought something and they double billed me last year in the billing cycle. And I cannot figure any way to produce a complaint or evidence.
Where, on Amazon or on Walmart?
Amazon.
You just go down to the contact us. You bring up the chat. You say what happens. 1, 2, 3, they'll take care of it.
I go where?
You got to go to the contact us. You got to find the contact us, and it's all the way at the bottom. And then you go through there and you go
I've tried to go through this, and it just gives you a bunch of screens.
Yeah, you go to the chat and just start chatting with somebody. Say, hey, here's my order.
Chat, and I got a robot.
Oh, you just got to, I always say, are you a robot? And it goes to the right
part. I do that too, but it doesn't seem to help.
I don't know. I've had good luck with Amazon. Anytime I've ever had a complaint.
All right, well, I'll give it a
shot. Yeah. Anyway, so we're talking about the reopenings. We'll see a V-shaped recovery for earnings. This is more of this bull case narrative. Buy stocks as the extreme stimulus will provide relief and support for the markets. So, and there's nowhere else.
Let's stop right there.
Yep, this is the narrative. I'm not saying
who's going to buy. What maniac is going to buy stocks?
Do you see what's happening with the market the last few weeks?
What, and who are those people that are buying stocks?
It's Mr. and Mrs. Algo, Mr. Hedge Fund trying to keep up with the numbers for the year so they don't fall behind. It's the average investor just kind of dollar cost.
The average investor's in.
The average investor is always.
Pull the rug out from under him. average investor's in. Let's screw him.
I don't know who's really putting all their money in right now and reinvesting and doubling up because, yes, there was a really good run from the bottom. But I just, there is the possibility that, we may see a run up and a move to the highs for some reason because there is all the stimulus. But if you have any sense, and here's the next step of this little section here. The reality is we're going to see $120 to $130 of earnings for the S&P 500 for 2020. That means the current PE at these current levels is 22. That was the levels at the all-time high. How could we be at multiples that are at those levels in a time when you should be paying 14, 12? It makes no sense. So even though if you look at 2021.
You're never going to get brought into CNBC.
No, never. That's why I got to be relegated to Twitter streams, for God's sakes.
Twitter streams and podcasts.
Right. All right.
Man who called the bottom.
Yep. Money for everyone is our next topic. The UK government has announced a £1.25 billion support package to help, listen to this, to help tech startups. Can you believe that?
What?
Yep.
What tech startups are out there that need help?
But it's kind of interesting. Isn't the whole nature of startups to have some kind of product?
They're startups.
They're startups.
Yeah, they're startups.
Right. I want to be a startup.
Angel investors. They got money to take, they mortgage their house. They borrow money. They do what the startups do. They don't expect a government handout right at the outset. This has never happened before.
I know.
Why would it happen now?
So they've been crying for financial support after rivals in France and Germany were given access to funds of $4.4 billion and $2 billion respectively.
So what?
So now, it's not fair. It's not fair.
That's one of the reasons that we have more tech startups that work out as opposed to, France, Germany, and all these guys who get these government handouts and then sit on the money or spend it on new cars and then go broke. I mean, they squander the money. We don't.
It's just the way this is going on to support every single business. I don't wish anybody ill, but even a forest has to have a fire every once in a while, and the ash eventually gives way to a much healthier underbed, right? And the bedding of the forest, and you get great growth, the stronger system after that. If you keep on letting the forest grow, when it burns, it's going to burn out of control one day, which is where we are now.
And we've seen a fractal of that with the forest fires in California.
Exactly. And the fake ones, wherever they were, right? New office paradigm, the novel coronavirus may do to U.S. office rentals what e-commerce did to malls. Or so goes the line of thinking running through commercial real estate right now. So they're thinking that millions of people are going to start working from home. And that's going to change the entire office, face of the commercial office real estate. I think companies, if they can say, hey, we can have people working from home, maybe we'll even pay them a little bit more to work from home and not pay this ridiculous rent that we have to pay at these places because we have the technology to do so. That may be a problem for commercial real estate in major cities. We'll see what happens in your neck of the woods.
Well, I wrote an essay on working from home that's linked here and there. You should probably link it from our site. Where I have mixed feelings about it, because I've been working from home since 1985, more or less. I do work once in a while in a real job. And I don't think everybody can do it. I would say, though, I think very few people can do it without, coming to blows with their spouses in particular. But there is a contingent of tech workers but mostly in this area and maybe in Southern California, parts of New York and elsewhere, where, yeah, they're accustomed to it. They have the right equipment. They know how a network works. They can hook up a VPN or link to one without getting confused and make it work. But generally speaking, I don't think it's for everybody, and I don't think it should affect office space that much.
Yep, I would agree with that. So we know there's going to be some bankruptcies, right? We're seeing JCPenney's filing for bankruptcy. Neiman Marcus is thinking about it as well. Gym chain 24 Hour Fitness is working with advisors at a variety of firms to weigh options, including bankruptcy, because they have a heavy debt load, which is a big problem for a lot of these companies. They have deteriorating performance and, of course, the pandemic, which is a problem. And they're having to, you know, shut all this. I find it really fascinating, by the way, that in phase one of the grand reopening plan under new management, right, of the United States.
Yeah, that, big sign out front.
Right, grand reopening. That what's really fascinating to me is that in the first round, in the first phase, phase one, gyms are being opened. Now in Georgia, they're opening up massage therapies places. They're opening up salons, nail shops. Yeah. Can you imagine that? They're doing that right off the bat. They're doing that starting Friday, I think, in Georgia. And I don't think they met the criteria of the 14-day downward trajectory. Maybe they did, but I think they're on the edge. But the first thing they're doing is opening up. If there's anything that could possibly give you this disease in close proximity, it's a massage. What are they thinking? I think somebody needs a little action at the massage places.
I think there's some, yeah, I don't know what they're thinking.
Somebody misses their masseuse. That's what's going on.
I can see the gyms, you know, being a good idea to get people back into being a little more fit so they could work harder. But I don't know.
I mean, but the problem with the gyms is very difficult because you're going to be stepping on a machine that someone's...
Oh, no, there's the things that... commercial, large scale, no offense to the gym owners out there, but the thing is just rife with bacteria.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
People get MRSA. They go to the gym. Next thing you know, they get the flesh-eating bacteria.
I don't know how that made it into stage one of this thing. Now, you sent me an article this week, and I don't know if this was this whole thing is being said to be an accidental release. There was this professor, Luc Montagnier, winner of the Nobel Prize for Medicine in 2008 for discovering the HIV as the cause of the AIDS epidemic. You sent me this article, right?
Yeah.
And together with Francois Barre, the SARS-CoV-2 responsible for the COVID-19 pandemic is the virus that was manipulated and accidentally released from a laboratory in Wuhan. Now, what is this all about?
By an intern. Well, he believes, I'll just put it in a nutshell. He believes that this particular novel corona was actually, because it's got an HIV characteristic to it, that he thinks it was being developed to work in conjunction with developing HIV vaccines. And he says, it's not unusual to do this. You do this, you take one animal and make it produce, like there's some, I think, pigs or something that can make a lot of insulin. You can do these things. You can manipulate these things in a lab. And once they get manipulated, they can be useful in the lab for doing whatever it is the target is. But if they get into the wild, which is rare, and this happened from some intern, he claims, everyone thinks, or somebody said this. I think these guys are in the know, by the way. He says the thing goes out into the wild, and it's very dangerous when it gets out there, something like this. But it can't survive because it's not a natural – it's not a thing that's been created by nature and eventually just falls apart because it can't reproduce properly enough times. And
right. And
so you ended up with the situation we now have, which we had different kinds of corona. There's all these variations that are cropping up. But last time I looked, there was 8 of them. And this is typical of some sort of a virus that is not doing well. It's falling apart. And he thinks the thing will be – there won't be any of these things left in a year, and all the rest of it is nonsense, the vaccine and all the rest of it. And it was a very convincing argument.
I mean, I'm sure, but the point was that it was accidental, not purposefully.
Yeah, it was accidental, and it wasn't a bioweapon. It was the two major points.
Right. Well, with that, even though this is, I mean, it's out there right now. So, yes, a vaccine may be necessary at this point or possible. Who knows? But Gilead, which is one of the front runners in producing some of the plans for a vaccine, surged about 16% on Thursday after a report detailed an encouraging partial data report from trials of U.S. companies, of their company's experiment with remdesivir. So what's interesting about this is it was a University of Chicago hospital, and I think there was about 125 people in there, and the people were very sick. They were on respirators, and taking this drug and this regimen, they seemingly broke their fevers and were breathing on their own a lot quicker from this very small group than otherwise they would have expected. And everybody just got giddy about this thing. Gilead, even the person who wrote this article, I think it was in Stat Magazine or Stat Blog or Stat something. They came out and said, I don't even understand why people are getting so excited about this. It's one little area. Gilead came out and says, the totality of the data need to be analyzed in order to draw any conclusions from the trial So they're even saying that, you know what? This is not a double-blind study, right? It's only a small grouping, which is not necessarily representative of the entire group, and we can't draw any conclusions. Meanwhile, the markets went like haywire last week on the
street. Yes, it was wild.
Yeah. And finally, with the coronavirus, we have some spotty numbers. The U.S. had a pretty big uptick. Singapore, now this is interesting. Singapore, which was previously considered to do a really great job with this whole virus and the way they're doing things, reported more than 1,000 cases for a second day in an acceleration. So a little bit nuts. So I need to ask you, these protests, it seems to me that on one hand, there's now all of a sudden Attorney General Barr is going to possibly be suing the governors for violations of personal liberties because of some of the overwhelmingly strict requirements on people in their houses. I find it very interesting how we singled out a few different states, and none of these states really have a significant decline in cases to say that, oh, nothing's going on there, so just let them go. And we have people protesting, which is in direct, it's in direct opposition of the laws about sheltering in place. I don't understand. And nobody seems to be too upset about this. Well, there are. It seems the Democrats are upset and the Republicans are like, hey, yeah, no good. Why has this become a political football?
I think a lot of it has to do with Trump, who's been kind of goading these guys to do something. And I will argue with your point about this. Some of these states, you know, have, I don't know what their numbers are, but California, for example, has, which is much more populous than New York, has 1/10 the number of cases, 1/10 the number of deaths anyway. And it's been on strict control for a while, but it's not enforced. So nobody in California is too bent out of shape, but they're starting to get, they may start enforcing a mask law, which is going into effect in certain counties. A lot of this has to do with Virginia. Virginia has somehow, and the Republicans, and they hate the governor of Virginia, the Republican Party in general.
Right.
And the guy is like a Nazi. And he's trying to turn the COVID-19 thing into a guns control issue. So he's closing the gun shops, right, and he wants to confiscate weapons because, you know, now that they're in a police state. And really, if you just study what's going on in Virginia and don't pay attention to the rest of it is just minor. I think the Michigan protests are because they hate the governor up there, or this woman. And it's just a lot of it's a distraction. I don't pay much attention to it, except the Virginia stuff is kind of interesting.
Yeah. A couple things I want to mention, a quick little announcement, a little service announcement. First of all, everybody needs to understand and be very clear. And you probably know this because we have a very smart and intellectual and plugged in audience. But just remember right now, scams are rampant. Any kind of money.
Oh, I got one.
What, you have a scam?
Yeah, somebody called.
Oh, what happened?
It was a recording. It was like really crappy recording, but it was different than the ones, the normal scams, which the, if you notice that all the scams were the different, you know, car warranty, better interest rate, free trips to Bahamas, cruise lines. They all have the same hold music.
Right.
They always, you know, it's always the same.
Right.
And so, and there's always some guy, it's always in a boiler room. It's, they're all the same.
Yep.
But this new one is different.
Oh.
And for, it starts with a recording, a pretty good recording of a guy saying your water and power is going to be shut off in 2 hours. And then they give you an 800 number to call. But unfortunately, I guess some people called it and it jammed it up. I couldn't get through. But I wanted to record the 800 guy. But it's on, if all you have to do is Google it, PG&E says they're not cutting anybody's power off during the pandemic, and this is all bogus. But that was this, one of the big scams.
Crazy. Unbelievable. But yeah, stay away from scams. New pyramid schemes out there, the make $800 by sending in 100. You've probably seen this on Facebook. A lot of your friends say, hey, we're doing it like this, and they show you this little chart and how it works, and it, you know, just stay away from
that. Doesn't anybody in this day and age know anything? I mean, those pyramid schemes are a million years old.
Yeah, but everybody's like so much time on their hands and they're looking at social media and all that, and it just it becomes a problem. Last thing I want to mention, which I think you're going to find really fascinating in this section, is IBM. I calculated the buybacks, the share buybacks over the last 20 years has been $140 billion. $140 billion. Current market cap of IBM, $100 billion. So that didn't work so well, did it? I don't think so.
It didn't work so well at all. You just threw away $140 billion. They actually spent that much money to buy back their stock, and the company's not even worth that.
Yep. Quick note, thank you very much, everybody, for the donations. We got some late birthday donations in. We got some 26 26s, and I guess that was double 13 somehow or something. But if you do want to donate, and it's really important to do so to help the show, you can go over to DH Unplugged and click on the little yellow button and just send a couple of bucks our way. Do it on a recurring basis if you want, or just simply give a one-time donation. We pay for the t-shirts, which we're going to get to in a second, and all the server time and all this technology that we're using. It's just expanding rapidly, the media footprint
Empire.
That we have. Yeah, crazy. All right, let's talk about DH Unplugged. Closest to the pin, we have a winner.
Yes.
That was for Costco. And this is, I think, a three-time winner now. It goes to Steve B., who was 0.25% or 81 cents off of Costco's price, which closed in at $317.92 on the day. So congratulations to Steve. You won... another t-shirt. He's given actually that to his grandchild because he, I think, kept one for himself, gave his kid one, and now he's giving his grandkid one. So there you go.
You're only at $2 off, and how you're only 6%? How are you a huge 6% off?
It's $20 off.
What was the closing? I on here it says 290.
No, mine is 290. Where is it? It says 317. Looks like 97, 92.
Oh, okay.
In the green. The gigantic green price in the middle.
Oh,
the really big, gigantic price.
I was looking at average entry price.
Right, okay. 298. So they were pretty much where I was. You were a little bit low, but that was that last day move, that Thursday and Friday move. Pretty amazing.
I was only off 2%. That's not
great.
Too bad.
You did great. You fell in the top 10, definitely. What time is it? Okay. Mm-hmm. Spotify.
I believe this Steve B guy.
Did great. Very impressive.
We got to find out who he is.
Yeah, we got to find out either he's hacking our system.
What is he doing? What tool is he using?
Yeah. Steve, if you're listening, write me. You wrote me earlier. So write me. Tell me how you're picking these stocks. Spotify, I didn't know this. Or as Johnny Carson would say, I did not know this. That was bad, but nonetheless. Spotify has made playlists for podcasts and music for dogs to listen to in their owner's absence. They have to find that nearly 74% of UK pet owners play music for their animals. There you go.
Brother.
U.S. airlines have mortgaged their gates, their flight paths, and just about any other asset they can.
I bet they do.
And they're also now considering selling miles in bulk back to the credit cards to raise cash.
Wow. Mm.
They said this wouldn't happen. Boeing posted a total of 150 MAX cancellations in March, including 75 that were previously reported from Irish leasing company Avalon. New cancellations came from buyers, including 34 of 135 aircraft ordered by Brazil's GOL.
I think they're going to have to kill this plane.
Yeah, they say it's being killed themselves. It's just everything's you couldn't have a worse situation.
It's going to kill itself. They're just going to build a bunch of planes that can't sell.
Yeah.
Which they've already done.
Yep. Let me see.
Good work, Boeing.
Yeah.
Good engineers you got there. Good software guys.
Right. And finally,
maybe you shouldn't have outsourced the code to wherever you did. India?
Where did they? Did they? No.
You tell me. They won't talk. There, nobody's talking about it. Somebody wrote that code.
Hmm. Interesting. I'm trying to think where I put this here. All right. Well, and finally, President Trump said he'll suspend new legal immigration for 60 days to help put Americans back
to
work.
Oh, they're all bent out of shape about that for some reason. Yeah. What difference does it make?
I don't know. All right. We're going to do a couple of limericks here. I think, let me see here. That's not it. That's not it. I don't know what happened to my limerick.
You got to clearly label things.
There is a show called DH Unplugged.
That's it.
Limericks in the program are debugged, listener supplied, with entries worldwide. John and Andrew make sure the writer is plugged.
Yep. A lot of stuff going on here. I'm like, I got the Liberace piano all around me here.
You could have been at an AM radio in the 60s and 70s I forgot what that's called, single hander or something like that. You just every guy doing everything.
Yep. So the first limerick is from Bob Eddings. Remember the, I'll try to look at this on the Twitter stream as well. You can vote A through F, A plus, A minus, B. You vote on these, how you think these went. Same thing with the chat room, and we will go through this. The first one's from Bob Eddings, and his limerick goes like this. A viral pandemic got started. The markets all sputtered and farted. Like a salute to a hero, the Fed rate might go to zero in honor of the dearly departed.
Well, it's a little, it's an interesting because it's got some filth in there, which a good limerick should. And then it kind of goes maudlin with the dearly departed, which is kind of like, you know, should we be giving, I'll give him an A minus.
A minus. You're definitely.
It was well structured.
You're very, a lot better. Remember, we're a little bit delayed here, so I'm not sure how long it's going to take people to actually get on there, but we'll see if that comes in. Got some B's, got some A's. Nathan Strumfield sends in his thoughts on this, and it goes like this. The markets have taken a beating, and some say that China's been cheating. They downplayed the virus so it would surprise us, and now they can buy our stocks cheaply.
Well, that got off to a tremendous start.
I say the same thing. Great start.
Yeah, it was rolling, and then it just kind of fizzled out and fell apart. And he didn't spend enough time on the last three lines, so I'm going to give him a C.
All right, and the last one is from Jennifer Chang, and hers goes like this: The reopening of states we must before the economy goes bust. We'll do everything to try, says Trump with a sigh, for in us America's trust.
In us Americans trust.
America's trust, yes, you're right.
In us America. This is actually pretty good, although it's a little tight. It doesn't have it loses a little rhythm, but I'm going to give that one an A minus.
A minus, there you go. We got a couple more that are pending. If you have your limerick that's related to the Fed and the market, send it in to dhemail@dhunplugged.com. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk.
along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures.
There you go. You didn't see my mouth move on the video because that's a pre-recorded deal. But we're going to go through the stocks now, and we're going to come up with some ideas. I have one, but why don't you take the list?
Okay, well, let's look at it. We have three reds and one, two, three, four greens, so we haven't been doing that well. But the first stocks, which I'm going to mention, we really didn't pick. There's something we just want to track, and they have to do with COVID, and that was Allied Healthcare, Becton Dickinson, and Medtronic. And Medtronic has done quite well. It's up 26% on a lark. Allied Healthcare is down, and Becton Dickinson's up about 7%. But Medtronic, I should mention,
yeah,
if you were playing the market in the late 60s before the crash that took place in 69 and 70, Medtronic was one of the high rollers. There were articles written about Medtronics and how can a stock sustain 100 EPS earnings, price earnings. So why could they have a price earnings of 100? And Medtronic has always been around, and it always seems to crop up and go up just before the fall.
Ah,
I'm just saying.
You have another stock like that too. What was the other stock that you always say?
It was Triode.
No. It was like, there's a name like a Hammerfield. There was like an industrial.
I'll think about what it is. I have three, actually. I have three of these stocks that when they go
Parker
up.
Parker Hannifin or something? Or
no, it's not ringing a bell. I'd have to think about it. I'll come up with it because I don't have to really come up with it because it will show up.
Ah, gotcha.
It'll show up and then I'll say, there you go. That's the one.
Yep.
So Medtronic is one of these, and there it is. Service Corp, which was a caskets company, is down for some reason.
Yeah, it's not dead, though.
Well, because there's not enough dead people.
Not yet.
Yeah. 2 million. Yeah. Then you had your famous Facebook short, which has actually gone up.
Yep.
It's dead money, to be honest about, but it's up 0.28.
Right.
Howard Hughes Corp, which was – I was bottom feeding on that one. It was a insider's buy, and it got kicked off because of the – ups and downs, but it closed higher. I'm up 4%, 4.3.
Right.
So it's okay. I get that. It's okay. And then you came up with Marsana Therapeutics as
that wasn't me. That was you.
It was?
Yeah.
And I had a 20%. Okay. I'm still sticking with it then. Now is the time to buy it. It's at $8. But it's down 5%. And now here's your new one, which apparently is FLIR Systems. FLIR or FLIR. I don't know who they are.
FLIR. So FLIR makes... So have you ever seen like you see those images of you're on a boat and they have like night vision, like with a big boat, of course, large yacht. And they have these night vision devices that they have in the captain on the bridge. And so they can see at night. So that's one. Also, they make thermal readers. What's the word I'm looking for?
No, it's a thermal. They're orange.
Thermal imaging.
Infrared.
Yeah, thermal imaging, right?
Yeah, they're infrared specialists.
Right. So this is if you go into the airports and you see the people like walking by and you see the screens and
they make that screen. You know, do you remember during SARS they had these screens all over the place?
Right. So
what happened to those screens? Why don't they just use those screens?
I don't know, but there's new systems and they even have a portable one. You put it on your smartphone, you just plug it into the bottom and your smartphone becomes a thermal imaging scanner. I don't know how that works.
Cool.
Yeah. So I think that if you're going to have to take people's temperature to come into restaurants, you're not going to want to spend a lot of money on this. It's like $200, $300 for this. Or if I think it's high time that we have in theaters and coliseums and in trains, planes, we need to have this as one detection unit that if anybody's showing a fever, we may have to do something about that.
Well, I could see some other uses for something like this.
Like what?
Especially if you're a young man.
Oh.
Well, you might want to throw the thermal imager on your girlfriend and see what's up.
Or better yet, go to a bar with it and see if you get close to somebody if they're
Well, you can. No, I'm thinking of scanning their whole body and certain parts of their body. You know, somebody might be aroused. Not to be too lewd about this. And you see a hot spot there. You go, well, this is interesting.
Well, there you go.
So I'm going to put. I think it's a possibility.
Yeah, I'm going to put Fleer on there. What do you have?
I got nothing.
Nothing, nada.
Well, there was a company that the insider's been buying a lot of because it collapsed called Stitch Fix. But, you know, I look at Stitch Fix, it's like I think it's at 13 or something like that. But I look at this as one of those many companies I always call 50-cent stocks. Nice company, probably a good price. It's a product, one product company. It's kind of a one product company that could be, should be bought by somebody else and DuPont, and they should just have it as a product. But it was kind of flying up there, and then it collapsed, and so one of the insiders is buying a bunch of it. But I know it's going to happen. It's going to do the dipsy-do like this other stock.
The old dipsy-do.
I'm going to be kicked out of it, so I'm not going to pick anything.
All right, well, we'll leave it there. Well, everybody, it's important to mention that, of course, if you like what you're hearing from John and you want to get some more lewd and other sexual discussions that relate to the unrelated, well, you can listen to more on Thursdays and Sundays on No Agenda with Adam Curry. They do a great job, bang-up job, of dissecting the news and really giving you the deep, down, and dirty. 12 o'clock live streaming. You can go to noagendastream.com. You can also find it on any podcast distribution network anywhere. And as they say, it's the best podcast in the universe. Right, John?
It is, actually.
Yeah. And, of course, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can find a podcast that we did. We had a great guest on this week talking about fundamental analysis. Left Brain Investment Research, Nolan Langford, was on. So that was pretty cool. We had a really good discussion there. So if we have nothing else to talk about, I think we're going to cue the closing hymn.
Yes. Well, then I'll talk to you on Tuesday.
All right. I'll see you then.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.